Welcome to this final session in our series on pilgrimages. And we're bringing it back home to Westminster this week. We are so grateful to have Paul and Sandy Connolly, Bobby and Tom Hartman, and Doug Mitchell to lead us in this discussion. And I'm going to since Sandy is sitting there, I'm going to put her on the spot because I didn't forewarn her that I'm going to let her open with a short prayer.
Okay.
Great.
No problem at
and,
all.
And I'll just turn it off over to you and turn off my camera.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Ted. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we are so grateful to come together this morning to talk about beloved places on this globe, Haiti and India. They are beloved by so many and are places that we know you love all the people there, and we know you love us, and we are grateful that you've brought us together. Please bless this hour. We ask all these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Well, good morning. My name is Sandy Connolly, and I welcome you to the final presentation of Paths of Pilgrimage. The seminar will feature reflections from some who have journeyed to Haiti and India as ambassadors from Westminster Presbyterian Church. We hope to give you a sense of how God has forged a strong bond between people and ministries in India and Haiti over the course of many years. First, just a bit about how we have structured this presentation. We're going to spend the first 20 minutes on Haiti, the second 20 minutes on India, and then the remainder of the time will be set aside for your questions and comments. You can post questions in the chat, which we will address after we conclude both presentations. I'm so grateful to have as fellow presenters Doug Mitchell, Tom and Bobby Hartman, and Paul Connolly. Doug will focus on India shortly, while Paul, Tom, and Bobby will each share some insights about their experiences in Haiti. We have also invited a few other fellow travelers to contribute a couple of photos and a brief statement about the impact their pilgrimage experiences have had on them. Before I hand over the screen to my fellow Haiti travelers, I just wanted to convey to you that I have recently done a major shift in framing my thoughts about our travels to Haiti. For me, our journeys had always been labeled mission trips, each with a more task-oriented purpose in mind. But these past 3 weeks have helped me to see that each of our trips were God-centered journeys, and thus, indeed, pilgrimages. I loved Ken White's description of a pilgrimage as being a soulful journey in the company of God. I think we presenters would all agree that our trip experiences fit that description. And now, without further ado, Paul Connolly.
Morning, all. Ken White, in his presentation 2 weeks ago, made mention of Westminster's first involvement in the mission and ministry of the La Croix New Testament Mission in 1998. That year, George King joined a team of men and women from the Thomas Presbyterian Church to help finish the electrical work on the clinic that is part of that mission. George then recruited Ed and Dolly, his wife Dolly Linus, and myself the next year to again join with Thomas Church as we worked on the grain mill that was built to help bring refined grain from La Croix to market. As I reflect on this, my first of many trips to this Haiti mission, I am struck by the notion that this was very much a pilgrimage, and I was one of many pilgrims on a faith journey to parts unknown. On this first journey, I relied on those that had been there before to lead and guide all that we did that week. As part of the preparation for this trip, George met with Ed and I to describe what we were about to experience in Haiti. This included mentioning to us the fact that it was necessary to have a Haitian guard with a machete keep watch over us as we slept in the simple dorm rooms provided. He told this story as he was not aware of this guard until he had to make a midnight trip to the outhouse and was startled when he encountered this man with a machete. Also, preparing for this trip to Haiti required us to get various shots to guard us against diseases. I mention all this as I recalled at the time that this would be, for me, by far, the greatest challenge to my sense of safety and security. A pilgrimage such as this is enhanced by traveling with other experienced pilgrims. Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, poses a profound challenge for subsistence living for its residents and visitors. After a 90-minute road trip up Highway 1, it takes 3 hours navigating around potholes and the only occasional piece of pavement, we arrived at the mission. One of our fellow travelers said, as we entered the mission compound, "It's so good to be home again." As I reflected on all that led up to that moment, the preparation, the travel, the seeing with my own eyes, the profound poverty that was all around, at that moment, I did not think of this as home. That first week, difficult as it was to adjust to, I was surrounded by dedicated persons, leaders with some experience working and living for a time in this particularly challenging environment. Now, after 22 years and subsequent pilgrimages to this place, acting as leader and guide to other pilgrims, I can honestly say when I arrive, it is so good to be home again. To me, reflecting on the impact of these many pilgrimages have had on me, I can say that I've come closer to God. Each time I pounded a nail, distributed food, supported a remote clinic, set up a computer, worshiped together with my Haitian brothers and sisters, and communed with my fellow pilgrims, as collectively we pursued Christ's call to serve. Now we invite Tom and Bobby Hartman to share some of their Haiti stories with you.
Tom and Bobby, you're still on mute.
Okay, and we have to start the video. You cannot start your video because the host has stopped it. Okay, now.
Host, let me see what I can do about that. There you go. Give it a try now.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
All right. Now, if you talk.
We're up here.
Yeah, but I think if you talk, you should come on.
Hello, I'm Tom Hartman, and I think I'm going to start. I can't, all right. All right. Many years ago, George King was my client at Allegheny General Hospital, and he knew I was an architect. And he asked me if I wanted to go to Haiti. It took 3 months, but I finally said yes and ended up in Haiti. Bobby didn't go with me on this trip, but we had already decided that we would sponsor a child. We got to Friday afternoon and I still hadn't met the child because that was the last day we were in Haiti. So off we went. The child sponsorship person had already picked the child for us, but we had to find the house and the community where she lived. We did both, and we ran into Gerdelin is this person beside me, my shoulder. Anyhow, She was standing behind her house in a pair of underpants and two mismatched sandals. I was introduced to her and I gave her a granola bar and she seemed pleased with that. Then I pulled out my camera and it was like an explosion. All the women ran. They ran into the houses and a minute later they came back and they had a little pink dress, which you see on this child beside me. Anyhow, that's the dress and that's the child from that same day. They plucked the dress down on Gerdolin and now she was ready for the camera. I often think about how important that dress was to make her look beautiful. I've done many trips to Haiti. I've done two schools with 40 classrooms, two clinics, a teacher's residence, an administration building, a library, and of course, a chemistry lab in one of the classrooms for you know who. I've been back 14 times and I'd love to go again when things settle down there. But my trip with my meeting of Gerdolin is my introduction to Haiti and I'll never forget it.
Oh, let's see. I must see if I can make that screen bigger, but speaker view. Ah, except it never shows me, so it doesn't really matter. All right. Good morning, everybody. I'm Bobby. We're sort of having amateur day at Zoom here.
Bobby, we can see you just fine. You're great.
Can you see me? Okay.
Yes, good. Ma'am.
All righty. Well, I hadn't thought of going to Haiti as a pilgrimage. My first trip to Haiti, I wondered what I could do to be of use. I didn't have any medical background. I had no construction experience. Tom had gone and really was anxious for me to share his experience. But my classes were in session. So I made up a plan to test the water in Haiti for bacteria. And I asked my dean for a week's leave of absence. And he said, fine. So off I went. The water testing was easy, but it turned out to be just the tip of the Haiti iceberg for me. One of Pastor Pierre's gifts is discerning other people's gifts. So somehow he learned that I was a chemistry professor. So early in the week, he said, can you do an experiment for the class? Well, I hadn't brought anything with me, but I didn't want to say no to Pastor Pierre. So I raided the kitchen. I got bottles and salad oil and water and salt and soap. Went into the classroom and there were the students sat at these long benches, but they were squeezed into the first two rows and really leaning forward. And this was my first hint about how this classroom experience would be somewhat different from what we have in Pittsburgh, where there is often competition for the back rows. I was nervous, eager to make a good impression and prove my worth. My lesson was on solubility, like dissolves like. These students already had a chemistry teacher, so they knew about molecules. So when I talked about charge and similarity of salt and water and how salad oil molecules were very different, they understood that. Like dissolves like. Water dissolves salt, but not oil. We tried mixing the oil and water, everybody shaking it like crazy, but it always separated. So we got out the soap. We added soap to the water and oil mixture and shook it up and voila, they mixed. The students applauded. This wasn't my normal classroom experience. We had a brief discussion about how the soap worked that little miracle. The soap molecule is very long and has two different ends, one similar to water and one similar to oil. So it bridges the gap between the oil and the water when they mix. Then one of the students asked, can you draw the soap molecule? Well, the molecule is really long, so I drew it and it stretched all the way across the entire chalkboard. And I ended with a little bow and the students stood and cheered. These wonderful young people had made me, the nervous American, feel so totally welcomed. All of my self-focused concern, what would they think of me? Would they accept me? This all disappeared in the light of their wonderful gift of hospitality. This is part of the magic of Haiti. We learn what our gifts are and find ways to share them. Part of pilgrimage, according to Ken White, is finding ways to serve. These Haiti students certainly led me in that path. Okay, I think we're back to Sandy now.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much, Tom and Bobby. Now we're going to switch gears a little bit and present a few PowerPoint slides. Got it? Okay. We want to share some thoughts and images from fellow travelers, Darby Gallo, Ray Van Cleve, Christine Hestwood, and David Kerr. Okay, so first up, Darby Gallo, and she reflects, and I quote, "As a teenager, I spent multiple weeks pilgrimaging to Haiti with Westminster Presbyterian Church. I didn't know it at the time of my first trip, but hours each day that we spent working alongside our Haitian friends would only deepen my faith in the Lord. As each day concluded, we would spend great lengths of time under the stars, reflecting on the day's activities. We would listen to each other share about how our tasks were completed, a challenge was overcome, and friends were made. To my ears, though, I heard people sharing how, through new relationships, open minds, and hands hard at work, God's presence never ceased. It's easy to look back and remember the friendships I've formed, the work we completed together, and the time I spent with my sponsor child. However, reflecting on the weeks I spent in Haiti mostly fills my heart with a faithfulness like no other. The pilgrimage we took together, week after week, only solidified what I knew to be true. Our Lord was and is ever present." And okay, great. We'll switch to now Ray Van Cleve, and his remembrances are as follows. Quote, "Haiti changed me in ways I could not imagine. I went to Haiti with the desire to do something. I had studied development economics in college, and I knew of all these policy experts who would go to developing countries and implement very cool programs that made a huge difference. I wanted to do that. In my desire to create a meaningful program that would support the community of La Croix, I very quickly learned that before I could do anything useful, I first needed to create a relationship with the Haitian community around me. I had to spend time talking, eating, sharing, and learning everything from them that they had to offer. Through my relationship with the Haitian people, I began to understand God's relationship to humanity. I had visions of what I could do, but that was my vision, and that would always be incomplete and lacking. In order to be the most useful for the Haitian people, I had to listen to the community and listen to God, putting my own desires aside. I spent a lot of time learning and just hanging around the people at the mission. This felt unproductive, but it was some of the most important work I did. I eventually created a program where Americans could donate a goat or farm animal to a Haitian family. The program worked well. We got over 70 families some livestock they would not have had otherwise. The mission got a fair amount of revenue and was able to support some of the poorest families in the community. This was also an important way to educate Americans about some of the hurdles facing the Haitian community. The program worked not because I figured something out, but because I listened to those around me. I followed God's lead and did what the community needed most. Haiti taught me humility in the most wonderful way possible, and I am eternally grateful for that lesson. And next, Christine Hestwood, she was much more succinct, but her reflections are just as powerful as she shared these memories. Purchasing goats and cows with Susan and Ray, and then being able to deliver them to families. Joyful smiles in the midst of extreme poverty. Education and food are key. Trips to Haiti were life-changing. And finally, David Kerr shared the following, and I quote, "Before I arrived in Haiti, it was a faraway place of which I knew very little. It was a place where churches sent money and missionaries, and there were people who needed our help. When I arrived in Haiti, things came into sharper focus. The people became Lou Benz and Pastor Evans, Kirby, Mary, Claire Denz, and Rickerson. They were no longer people in a far-off land. They were people that I met and spent time with and who lived here. Some of them became friends, and some of them were people who we served rice and beans to, who had a way of saying thank you that hit you square in the heart. As the years have passed, my memories have faded about the specifics of the trip, but the thing I do know is that I have friends in Haiti who worship the same God we do, who do need our help and our gifts, but who are mothers, fathers, friends, school students, daughters, and sons. So thank you, Darby, Ray, Christine, and David, for sharing your Haiti remembrances. Our last two slides show some of the teams of people who have traveled to Haiti over the years. As we look at these groups, we note that since February 2019, all trips to Haiti have been canceled due to safety concerns over civil unrest and COVID. Westminster joins with the hundreds of people from 45 churches who continue to maintain relationships with La Croix New Testament Mission through child sponsorship and other mission projects. We praise God for continuing to strengthen the ties that bind us to the people of La Croix until we can be together again. And now I ask Doug Mitchell to join us for his Haiti presentation.
You're on mute, Doug.
And now, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. And I think my buddy Ted is going to do the screen sharing for me. So that's good. I'm going to get on my horse because I know that my speech runs a little bit long. But here we go on the pilgrimage to India missions. And real quick, I will say that this journey started for me in church in 1990, where Laird Stewart described the Vision Campaign's international mission. Selected from 17 projects reviewed by a committee and determined to receive $200,000 in capital. He stated the group would be going to Mirage, India to determine exactly how Westminster would apportion the funds. My wife elbowed me, saying, "Why don't you go?" And those four words started a pilgrimage that has borne much fruit there, and over 50 people have experienced. I know many of their lives have been changed as mine was. Nancy Raymer in the upper left-hand corner in the train, that's the first class cabin, by the way, with Jenny Stewart on the right-hand side, Lee Lentz in the center, and a fellow named Art Acton, who is a professor and former member of our church, went on this trip in 1990. And very briefly, our total gifts were broken down to $120,000 to the Mirage Medical Center to purchase a cardiac monitor for open heart diagnosis. Had a wonderful impact. A $30,000 trust fund for the Songli Industrial School, which you'll see in a moment. $30,000 for a Creche Nurses Training School, which eventually closed. It was a health nursing program out in the villages. We had $10,000 in a trust fund for Vatiketh Development Center, which again, you'll see in a moment. And we kept $10,000 to assist with initial follow-up travel expenses for Westminster members. So let me show you what's been going on over there for 30 years and give some serious thought about coming along to see this for yourself. Click, change the slide. Nancy Raymer made a comment as we got off the train. She said, okay, now folks, you're going to get off this train, and when you do, you're going to be stepping into God's plan. And this is the truth. We felt it every day we were there. These are the four projects that we're going to talk about. The upper left is the hospital, Mirage Medical Center. Fletcher Hall in the center at the top there is where we stay. At the bottom left is the church that Pastor Timothy operates in the red light district in Songli. In the center at the bottom is the chapel on the campus of the hospital. And in the lower right is the Vatiketh Development Center, which we spent about a third of the money for. And that is for physically and mentally challenged kids. Upper right is the Songli Industrial School. Speaking of stepping into God's plan, that bus, number three, the donor for that bus is the Irvington Presbyterian Church in Indianapolis, Indiana. I just have to tell you, when I walked up and saw that bus, I knew I was in God's plan, because that's where I participated in a kindergarten class with my grandmother who played the piano. Next slide. First, we're going to talk about the Mirage Medical Center, Wanless Hospital. Mirage Medical Center started with Dr. William Wanless, who was sponsored by Bryn Mawr Presbyterian Church in Philadelphia, among others, providing primary care for tuberculosis caught through inhaling the smoke from cow dung cooking fires in the local houses. That still goes on. In those days, the Presbyterian Church distinguished itself among Protestant denominations with its relationship-based missions, primarily medical, throughout Africa, later across India and Asia and all around the world. The hospital grew to 500 beds. You can, next slide. There we go. And attracted numerous highly skilled American Christian doctors, some who would come to stay and teach medical practice, including anesthesiology, in 6 weeks to the best and brightest nurses from the nursing school. In the top left is the nursing school in operation. In the center are the nurses leaving the chapel. On the right is the front view of the hospital, the main entry. Award in 1990 is in the lower left. Our gift is number three in the list there, $130,000 from Westminster Presbyterian Church. You'll note Fox Chapel is in the lead on that. And they had extra funds left over, and that's how Fletcher Hall got created. The Creche Nurses Training School is in the lower right. Okay, we're ready to go to the next slide. The chapel, by the way, is in the center at the top on the inside. And there was a point at which that roof had to be repaired. You'll note it's very dark colored right there. That's because the repairs weren't done yet. But here are a number of enhancements that Westminster was able to provide. Between 1990 and about 2005, our budget was about $10,000 a year throughout that, and that's how we did this. At the hospital, families would customarily camp outside while a member was hospitalized to provide meals cooked outside. Westminster funded a family shelter and sanitary facilities that were especially appreciated by those families during rainy season. Secondly, any hospital must have a laundry. In the lower left, you'll see that through the, quote, kind donation of Westminster Presbyterian Church, we repaired laundry equipment that was on the verge of collapse. Secondly, the main power box for this church, hospital, was in the basement. And the monsoon floods would frequently knock out the power. Tuesday evenings, the municipality's power would go out. So grants from Westminster funded a new above-ground junction facility in the upper right-hand corner and a new gas generator in the upper left-hand corner to provide consistent power. Ed Linus was our chief advisor in this, working with the hospital's engineers. The chapel at Marriage Medical is a daily routine with morning services for the doctors and nurses. One monsoon season, the roof was compromised and leaked, and we were able to provide funding to repair that. Next slide. Now we'll move to the new world, and you'll see in the upper left, Dr. Cherry and Thomas, who was the director when we showed in 1990, is showing the cardiac monitor that we helped to fund. Just to his right, you'll see another one, and that's because 15 years later, the one that we initially installed actually was replaced by something more current. This gift was multiplied, however, 10 times by a USAID grant that Medical Benevolence Foundation, which is another one of Outreach's recipients, they were able to get this grant, a $1.2 million grant to build a new cardiac care wing that you see to the right. Very modern. Also, the panoramic photo on the left-hand side is a new ICU area for cardiac patient recoveries. The heart man is on the left-hand side, a guy named Paragonquar. He is a stalwart fellow. He keeps the thing going. And then on the in the bottom row, there are a few pilgrims there from Westminster. You probably recognize most of their faces. Ed Sutter and Jim Gilchrist, the doctors who joined us, one from a French-speaking African country, are wearing blue shirts. And a couple of the doctors are also in that slide. Dan Paul is there, and Janet Hignett, and Jen Camity is with her. Next slide. This is where pilgrims stay, Fletcher Hall. Marriage Medical's Fletcher Hall is named for a Dr. Archie Fletcher, who was the hospital's director for two decades. An American missionary doctor and his wife, who came from another hospital in Cameroon. Marriage Medical provides beds, bathrooms, and a wonderful dining hall and conversation area, with Chef John providing our meals, with the spices tamped down a little bit for us Americans. But those are the facilities that we actually stay in. The dining hall is where that conversation area is. And I welcome you to actively consider coming along. After our assistance in 1990, Marriage Medical is currently going through another difficult time. There were some real estate transactions in the area that permitted a new privately owned hospital to be erected in the area, which has impacted on the higher income patients who were key to providing Marriage Medical's operating margins, which enabled millions of dollars of care for the poor to be performed. And recent government decisions to take over bed spaces because of COVID-19 and have impacted on the hospital's organization and its management succession. The hospital's board of directors, headed by the Church of North India, which is the partner with Presbyterian Church USA, they've not developed a strong business plan to replace the current director upon his retirement and to follow up with a plan to implement its intended strategy to form a medical college to to provide a pipeline of newly trained doctors willing to serve 5 years before they move to private practice. This has stalled our plans to support it. I've made contacts with several descendant families of the missionaries who served during these past 50 plus years, who are preparing to appeal to Presbyterian Church USA, our denomination, for support, and who are willing to help with funding themselves. So just for now, though, we've got a substantial crisis with the hospital that will take several years to resolve one way or another. Next slide. Let's move on to Vatican Development and Rehabilitation Centers. And go ahead, next slide. When we first arrived, Dr. V.C. George, who is on the left-hand side in 1990, had founded his own center to provide counseling and care for physically and mentally challenged infants and children. A nationally known clinical psychologist, Dr. George used his parents' gift of trust funds and redirected his life to this cause as God had asked him to. In 2013 through 16, the last 3 years of his life, Dr. George was honored to serve as the president of the Indian Association of Clinical Psychologists, providing him a platform for furthering cultural change regarding impaired persons. The road that passes by his school for kids and his rehabilitation vocational training center for adults was renamed the Dr. V.C. George Road. Westminster provided about one third of the $75,000 cost of the building you see in the center top on this slide. That's the Vatican Development Center. In 2011, we more substantially funded the Rehabilitation Center for Adults, which you see in the upper right-hand corner. I'm dreadfully shortening this presentation without talking at all about the wonderful things that have coached the parents of those young children to permit them in the first place to continue living. That's counter to their culture at this point. And to adapt their lives, the parents' lives, bringing them up in spite of the difficulties. There's a young artist who won a couple of national awards for his creation that came from this development center. The art you see on the wall in the upper left-hand corner was done by one of the teachers in the school. In the lower left-hand corner, you'll see where he was in 1990, and you'll see the exercise area at the bottom where the kids in 1990 were having their lunch. Obviously, the Vatican Development Center has taken this a long, long way. And you'll see also that the third item listed on the support plaque is Westminster Church. Next slide. As you can see, this is another slide of the development center in the upper left. You'll see in the rehabilitation center in the upper right-hand corner, the interior. They're well-suited for long-term suitability and sustainability. One of the teachers painted the wall decorations. I remember some of the young adults that you see here when they were kids. And how they create file folders for the medical center, for the hospital, the guy making green folders there, and store it on the right-hand side. They also make candles and clay pots for Diwali holiday celebrations, which you see in the lower left, and party decorations, and Christmas cards, which we have sold at Westminster some years. They also grow vegetables on the land in back of the rehabilitation center. All of the proceeds of these sales go directly to the adults who make them. And Westminster provides a part of the funding that pays the teachers and provides some of the materials. Our current budget for these centers is $9,000 a year. George passed away in 2016, but his wife, Irene, who's a wonderful friend of mine and who came to Westminster several times, has managed the trust fund's remains and has developed a plan to migrate these operations to Indian government oversight. Unfortunately, the new Modi government and COVID-19 have postponed final resolution of this agreement. And just for now, the development center is locked down along with most of the businesses in India. Westminster is continuing its support in the meantime. Next slide. Just briefly, here are a few more shots from Dr. George's service. The upper left and the left-hand side show a couple of the teachers who have been with this since the beginning in 1986. The graduate I mentioned earlier who raised the funds and set up an ice cream and popcorn store down in downtown Mirage, that's in the center. And the fellow in the green shirt, or the orange shirt, is our man. George was also able to bring some of the local villages to recognize that they could mainstream some of his school-age students. And we were able to visit one of those villages. There's Ed Soder in that village. Okay, next slide. On to the Songlee Industrial School. And you can change the slide from this point. There you are. The shot on the left was taken in about 2005. And the shot on the right was taken about a month ago. The old world again is on the lower left. That building is 125 years old. Floods in 2019, as you see in the center, devastated that building and the roof began to leak. If you look on the left, you see the interior, and you look on the right, you see the newly repaired interior. And so those monies did not come from us, by the way, but we were very active in pursuing the project. $25,000 did all of that, and that money came from the children of the two couples who were the missionaries who directed this place between 1954 and 84, the Raymers and the Syberts. Remember, Nancy Raymer was our escort in the first slide in 1990. Let's see. The building holds about 300 people. It provides classroom space around the perimeter for trades as electricians, welders, fitters, auto mechanics, small engine repair, HVAC and refrigeration, computer operations, carpentry and tailoring. Other nearby outbuildings house work areas for these trades, and a hostel and kitchen provide food and lodging for most of the students. The recent endowment grant of nearly $30,000 was made to replace a substantial number of electronic instruments that were destroyed in the monsoon in 2019 and also damaged the roof. Although the endowment fund was unable to fund the roof repairs, the families of the missionaries kicked that in. And we are in the process of applying for another grant from the endowment fund, trying to complete the funding for the equipment and for the roof. Songlee has been self-supporting now, except for such calamities. We did keep the operations afloat during the late 1990s with our initial trust fund. But aside from a $9,000 donation for operations and a $35,000 gift that established the corpus for its employee pension fund, which threatened its closure, this recent capital injection is the only Westminster supplied funding. Next slide. Now you see some of the equipment, some of which was damaged. But since 1998, the school has been directed by a fellow named Sandeep Rout, who's on the far left upper slide with Deb Schmid, one of our former members. And he is a 59-year-old Christian engineer and MBA who with his family live on the premises. Although it is now operated independently, its Christian basis remains the foundation for its mission. The school is actively supervised by a management committee which the local bishop chairs. And as Sandeep plans retirement in 2028, and we'll we'll see about that. The next potential turning point will be to find management with the skills, humility, fortitude, and faith that this man has provided. This year under COVID-19, the school was closed with the flood damages remaining unresolved. Sandeep and his family vacated their school's residence to live in a small cottage on the campus, while a Mumbai-based film studio crew used the residence as a movie set and paid rent for its use to benefit the survival of the school. Some of the most recent things we've done are on the right-hand side, the welding class, the equipment for that we provided, and the electrician's class is in the upper right. And we're ready for the next slide. On to the fourth and final project called Prabhat Tara Sansa, and it's run by Pastor Timothy Jalam. Okay. This pastor, who is on the left-hand side in the white shirt, was born in the red light district in Mirage, recognized by a local pastor and educated by him through his ordination. He founded Prabhat Tara Sansa, PTS for short, fills a huge gap in this society as children are rescued from the red light districts and receive food, clothing, shelter, and education through elementary school. Westminster currently supplies $6,500 a year, which is about 11% of its budget. We used to provide 25%, with about five other congregations and two UK and Scottish churches provide most of his support. Timothy operates a hospice for children with HIV/AIDS, which you'll see in the bottom in the center. And either they have been born with it or they caught it in the districts. His family, Anjan, and a trained doctor named Swita, his daughter, they are the staff. And you'll see there are some courses going on in the lower right. Those are the women of the red light district teaching literacy in the two slides in the lower right-hand side. And some guy from the United States is putting up some kind of sign up in the upper right there, Pastor Timothy. He does have great relationships created between us and the children. And the kids on the left-hand side are from the red light district in Mirage. Okay, next slide. Let's see a little bit more. You see the pump in the upper left-hand corner, which is almost identical, by the way, to the pump you saw in the Haiti slideshow. His ministry goes well beyond preaching. The districts are largely slums, comprising rough one-room dwellings along with tents and a hand-pump water well in each of the two settlements that serve 1,500 persons apiece, each one which was restored by Westminster funds. The district in Mirage is at the junction of a road to Sangli and the environs of the Mirage railway station, a place where over-the-road truck traffic collects. The tent camp is on one side of the road and the housing is on the other side, along with the water well. Timothy finds various ways to make sure that everyone gets fed and the children get some education. He's created small sewing and other craft businesses that the women are able to conduct. He adds dignity to the place. During a daytime visit, few men are present. On the lower right, you'll see the inside of the church and Pastor Timothy in the foreground. And in the lower left are more of the kids in the red light district in Mirage. Okay, let's go on and see the outside of those buildings in the next slide. There you go. The home of hope in the upper left is the residential area for most of the kids. The hospice is over on the right. The inside of the hospice is on the right in the lower area. And the, the meeting area of the Home of Hope is on the left-hand side. The hospital and hospice are very discreetly located in an industrial park remote from Sangli and Mirage. The visit there, however, is a really joyous occasion. On earlier visits, several Westminster women read Bible stories to the children, to their great delight, and Timothy and his wife, Anjana, usually find some way to tell the kids about the gifts that Westminster has provided, along with some refreshments, and some kids entertaining us by singing and dancing. These visits clearly demonstrate the importance of just being there to seal the relationship we hold with them. And just as important, to help visiting pilgrims to understand how that relationship truly is two-way. Timothy has recently received pressure from local authorities who have accused him of proselytizing Christianity, which is a crime. He has been extremely careful to avoid these kinds of situations, although his demeanor is sweet, yet courageous, even in instances which involve other local Christian entities. He's not afraid to explain God's love as a reason for his joy. Next slide. Well, that is Mirage, downtown Mirage, in the center at the top. And there's Ed Sutter with a friend on the train that he met. The Victoria Station in Bombay is on the right-hand side. Deb Schmidt is reading to the kids down at Pastor Timothy's place in the lower left. Some guy showed up with an elephant one trip that I took. And that's a shot from the Taj, where we visited a couple of times. And on the right-hand side, I was on my way home in 2016, and suddenly this truck went around us with an elephant in the back. I just thought you guys would love to see that kind of adventure. There's all kinds of things to see if you would go. And so as we close, I would say to you, you want to think about a pilgrimage? As long as you share your story after you return. Outreach contributes one half of the airfare for the trip. Room and board is minimal, about 30 bucks a day, something like that. Extra tourism is optional. If you want to come and you want to go somewhere different in India, I'm game. And the impact on your life, however, could be very significant. That's the end of my presentation. I hope we don't have, we've run long.
I guess we will just turn this over. I do want to say thank you to everyone who's participating, both the presenters and those of you who have enjoyed learning about Haiti and India. So Ted, can I throw it to you for a minute or two? I know we're running late, but what do you think?
I just want to say thank you so much. And we're coming up on the hour. So this will be available on the church website. I am so grateful to the presenters who have really brought an excellent close to this, and say thank you very much. And I'm going to stop the recording, but if you have questions and answers, have questions, I think our presenters will probably hang around to
absolutely
answer your questions.